It is just a couple minutes past 8, so we will get this meeting going. Excuse me, and before we start, I would like to welcome as a group from the Minnesota Rural Education Association in the back. If you would wave back there, and thank you so much for joining us on this early morning meeting. This is the Property Tax Relief and Local Sales Tax Division. And we have a number of bills today, and I think on most of the bills, just so everybody's clear, is we're going to be laying those over for possible inclusion into a possible omnibus property tax bill. So, I'm going to announce this after there's more members here. So we do have a birthday today up here in the front. I won't say who for sure that is, but for members and that, until we get more members, but there is some juice and there is donuts for anyone who might want one there. Representative Zellers, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And the first bill on the calendar, on the agenda is House File 2255, and I'll move House File 2255 for possible inclusion.
Do we have to wait for a quorum to move bill, Ms. Baker? Do you know if we...
Okay, so we will move this bill when we have a quorum. Representative Anderson, good morning.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for the treats here on the end.
You are very welcome, and we have a birthday, but we're not going to say who it is yet, so we get a few more members. It's our mystery birthday of the day. And it's not, that is George Washington's birthday. George Washington's birthday today, Representative Zellers. Very good. One, two, three, I think we need one more member. So, Representative Zellers, if you would care to explain your bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I may refer to Ms. Baker for some adjustments since this was introduced last year. And as we're going forward, since it's going to be laid over, we'll probably make an adjustment before, should it be included. The chair would graciously include it in the this bill. We would appreciate that, and it'd be an adjustment. Mr. Chairman, members, the reason I introduced the bill... You're getting a tax statement from some neighbors of my wife, just behind us, Vina Mary Law. And over cutting grass one afternoon, they came over and said, you know, there's really got to be something done. And Vina, my neighbor, said, you know the story of the golden goose? I said, I think so. I said, I'm not sure if I remember. He said, well, it's the golden goose. The farmer has the golden goose, and once a month he gets a golden egg. Waits for the egg, and then as long as he doesn't isn't too greedy or doesn't go too far, the goose lays one golden egg a month for him. And after a couple of years, the farmer decides, you know, I need two golden eggs this month. The goose isn't producing, so he gets impatient and he cuts the head off the golden goose to get all the gold out of the inside. Well, the goose is gone. And Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid with some of our lakeshore property, especially. Constituents of it. I think just about every one of the tax committee members has got a constituent probably who's got a lakeshore property. I'm afraid, Mr. Chairman, we've got the knife at the neck of the golden goose. If you look at Gene and Mary's, and I ask you please to keep this amongst you. I didn't know what to redact on their tax statements, but Gene asked me to share these with you. Just look at some of the evaluations where they've gone from 2003 and their projections for 2007. And I also included another story from a local columnist about some of our Minnesota heritage. A lot of folks think that those rich guys living up on a lake who have a great big cabin and have a house in the Bahamas and have a house on the lake and a house in the cities, but that's really not what it's about. Many cabins have been passed down from generation to generation, and the parents will pass it down to all three children, and those three children are splitting all the costs, either there's a mortgage left on it, or the property taxes, or the upkeep. And in Jean and Mary's case, they explained the two families right next to them, and said it would be a shame to see these six or seven young kids on one side and eight on the other not have this cabin to pass down to the next generation, and that's what they're really afraid of. And And, you know, there are some folks that are grabbing up two lots and developing. Make no mistake about it. That is one of the things that's happening. And the old adage that they're not making any more lake property, so the value will keep going up. But what we're trying to do in this bill, Mr. Chairman, is to keep that value from maybe just having a cooling off period, because around my district, the metropolitan area, values were still going up last year, but I was looking around my neighborhood, looking at some of the signs and some of the for sales. They weren't selling for what my local Hennepin County property taxes were assessed at. There were very few houses that were actually within $10,000 to $20,000 of assessed value. So with what we're trying to do, and it is a property tax freeze in essence, but it's just a freeze in the evaluation, so that some of these folks like Gene and Mary, who have seen their values, you know, literally skyrocket over the last 4 to 6 to, and they would even say 10 years. He just gave us a few of the statements. It's just have this cooling off period, so that for at least 2 years, there's not going to be a huge rise. And if there's any the technical questions to the bill after we, if there's any questions, Ms. Baker said she'd be willing to help. We weren't able to connect yesterday about some adjustments to the bill.
Thank you very much. And Representative Zellers, do you have any buyers yourself?
None that I know of. Gene and Mary were going to try and make it, and through the previous doctor's appointment, they said they would not be able to make it down this morning.
Appreciate you sharing that with us. Members, questions for Representative Zellers? If not, we could also call up some testifiers if you want to wait. So, anyone from the public here to speak for or against House File 2255?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Dietrich.
While they're coming up, I'd just like to, you know, recollect when we went around the state last, was that 2 weeks ago, and spoke to the property tax owners, about property taxes, excuse me. You know, especially when we went to the Champlin, and Champlin is very close to Maple Grove, the Champlin area, that was the number one concern that we heard was a seasonal wreck, property taxes, and the difficulty of maintaining their second home.
Very good. So, Mr. Forster here, would you care to identify yourself? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff Forster, and I am Executive Director of Minnesota Seasonal Recreational Property Owners Coalition, and I'm here just in support. I mean, Representative Zellers made a great point about there's a misperception about who the majority of these seasonal property owners are. For instance, the legislator with the most seasonal property owners living in their district is Tom Rukavina, which is, you know, kind of startling. It's not, by and large, the wealthy people from out of state that are flying in for these cabins. But it's becoming more and more that, and the impact, I mean, there's obviously a fairness issue, there's an affordability issue, there's also a big environmental issue. The Forest Service recently completed a study of family forest land owners in Minnesota, and they found, what we found, is that 86% of the seasonal owners don't want to subdivide and develop their land. But the average size of a seasonal parcel in Minnesota has shrunk from 79 acres to 53 acres in the last few years. So, you know, I mean, Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes, and this type of tax pressure is just is destroying it. I mean, and when we lose our land, we lose our brand. And there's a lot of larger issues here. There's something haywire, and I think a two-year freeze is a good idea until sort of a more systemic fix can be accomplished, you know.
Thank you very much. Mr. Forster, you know, and you, about on limited market value, you get about a total statewide about $33 million that's being captured, about 7%, which is down from a few years ago when it was about 11% of it being captured. But when you look at the stats, the two big areas that really do stand out who are benefiting the greatest from the limited market value is the seasonal rec, which is about 21% of is captured.
Right.
And the next is ag land at about 18%. Actually, residential homesteads down to about 3%.
Right.
And the values are leveling off there, but we do still see them going up on seasonal rec. And I
So, and looking too, out of that $33 million that I mentioned, about $5.5 million is being captured, or whatever you want to say, by seasonal rec, which isn't a great amount. But the one question I have, and this gets to the bottom of limited market value, is what do you say, let's say we were to do it on seasonal rec, what do you say to those other property owners who that $5.4 million is going to be shifted onto to raise their taxes? What would, you know, what's the argument there to say seasonal rec, and yet we know everyone else is going to have to pay a little bit more?
Well, seasonal rec has been paying, I mean, we've been paying a lot over the last, I mean, when you look at our property class, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think the projection on property tax increase for seasonal rec was 23% this year as a statewide average. I mean, I see bills that are, you know, tax statements with 123% increase in tax in a year. My taxes last year went up 80%. My tax bill, not my assessment. That's just not, it's not sustainable, you know. So I guess, you know, the timing of the OMB phase out was just, you know, it came in 2001, and then in 2002 interest rates went down, and there was one of the hottest real estate markets in the history of the state. So the timing of the phase out was just very difficult, you know. And OMB, I think, will eventually phase out, and things will be equalized. But right now, I don't think is the time to do it.
Mr. Chairman,
to also add on to that, those dramatic swings are exactly what were the exact idea behind the bill, is to not to necessarily shift that burden. Although I understand when you're when you adjust a little lever over here on this side of tax policy, it pulled four or five gigantic levers on this side, which is why we have learned folks in nonpartisan research to help us through all those pulls and levers. But the point is that in a lot of cases, folks have been and are going to be even greater at feeling the assessment and shouldering a burden that, again, some would argue that if they can afford a second home, maybe they should shoulder the burden, but that's not necessarily the average cabin owner. And we're looking to keep the small families or the group families together in these cabins so that they don't turn into a McMansion on the prairie and have someone buy up two small cabins, and because they know the local folks, they can, you know, put up a big cabin with the right specs and the right, you know, one wall the same. There's all kinds of different. If you've ever been, anybody's ever belonged to the Lakeshore Association, you know that this politics down here is nothing compared to that. So depending on who you get and how you do that, it's an amazing difference. So we're just looking to keep the regular folks, and if you've read the column there, just so that everybody can share in that mutual misery of going up to the cabin and hurrying and doing all those things before you have to leave on Sunday afternoon. So it's not that we're trying to shift the burden, Mr. Chairman. It's just to make sure that an unfair burden that has been assessed and looks like in the future to be even an even more egregious assessment in some cases doesn't continue. We want everybody to be able to pay their fair share.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And your question is a fair question, and I think the appropriate answer to the question is that for many years now, because the values of seasonal rec have escalated so rapidly, it's been growing local tax bases by pretty good percentages, and therefore seasonal rec property owners have been picking up a bigger and bigger portion of the local property tax bill, and therefore to give them a little relief for a period of time, I think seems to be reasonable, because they have been picking up more and more of the tab here in recent years. So I think we need to provide some relief here.
And Representative Lanning, in what Representative Zeller's Mr. Forrester said, does bear out in that you look at, well, you don't have this, but the simulation from House Research on taxable market value from final pay 2007 to proposed pay 2008, the increase in total market value, the one classification out of many, is the highest of seasonal rec.
went up 16.9%. Ag non-homestead next at 16.4%. So, I mean, you are seeing that, and the percent change expected in total taxes for seasonal rec is 9.4%, which is one of the highest ones. Actually, ag non-homestead is 14%. So we still have the ag seasonal rec as kind of being the main two yet. That it's kind of interesting that the state has had a even, you know, as you go back in the history here on this, has had a bit of a dilemma. We had it from 73 to 79, and then the tax court ruled limited market value unconstitutional. And then the next year, the Supreme Court of Minnesota reversed that decision, and in 93 we started limited market value. So there's always, even within our courts, been a bit of a debate. But I think this division is very sympathetic to this plight. And as we worked through that property tax bill last year, we were looking at ways to provide relief for seasonal rec. And, you know, we came up with a method. We did put a lot of eggs in one basket and trying to at least buy down residential homestead, you know, and then ag, and then and we're setting priorities. So by the time we got to seasonal rec, not saying it's not important, but we felt we had to deal with ag and residential homestead first. We're going to lay this over for possible inclusion into a possible omnibus property tax bill. And, you know, like I said, I think we're all very sympathetic. Any other comments? Okay. Oh, yeah. Yes, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. And I was wondering, Mr. Forster, if we're starting to see the roller coaster in seasonal rec that we're seeing in all the other residential homes that in terms of foreclosures, declining values, sort of, you know, I suspect it's not declining as fast as some of the residential neighborhoods, but in terms of, you know, I suspect it's harder to sell and mortgage it just because the underwriting criteria is getting so tricky for basic homes. Are you starting to see, you know, a hot market at least not climbing as hotly as it was in the recent years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I believe a few, was it like a month? In December, wasn't there a report by the Department of Revenue on this issue? I think in this room. And maybe it was, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember being here, and they were talking about how the prices have not started to fall yet in the on the Lake District. That what they're seeing is that properties that are for sale are staying on the market longer. I don't know that the assessments that I've seen, the estimated market values that I've seen on the tax statements that people are sending to me, certainly are still going up dramatically. So it hasn't made it through to the assessments. I don't think I haven't seen a drop. Whereas a house in Minneapolis that I have.
Mr. Chairman, just to comment.
Representative Zellers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and Representative Loeffler. Anecdotally, I called the realtor who happens to be married to a friend of mine from college and who sold my mother-in-law her cabin up in the Detroit Lakes, Pelican Rapids, Fergus Falls area. Asking her, I said, you know, are you seeing the value, you know, are the prices dropping? Are they in this area, in Representative Nornes' district and not too far from Representative Marcourt and Lanning, it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty hot area to buy, but it's not, you know, it's not exactly the hottest place in the state. And she said a property may stay on the rolls a month or two longer, maybe 3 months. She said, but it's just this traditional. People start to look at cabins just about now, you know, after they either go to or from their vacation in some warm place. But the cabin values and the prices aren't dropping. They just will maybe stay on the market a little bit longer. And the, you know, the valuations are really the problem because in some cases the local tax assessor, they see this as the golden goose. I mean, a lot of these folks are there for a few months in the summer, maybe in the fall if you have a year-round cabin. And when some of these decisions are being made, they're not there to either defend themselves or they're outvoted. And in some cases, especially in the Detroit Lakes area, you get a lot of residents from South Dakota and North Dakota who bought these cabins. So they're not even paying Minnesota taxes on their first home, let alone on their second. So the roller coaster, so to speak, is still very much screaming forward. And I don't know, as I said earlier, that we're not making any more lakeshore property, so I don't know that there will be a drop like a, you know, as we're seeing in some of our values in the metro area. I don't ever see a huge drop, maybe a plateau, but I don't see that violent or this, you know, huge downswing on the property, at least on the price side.
Thank you. We need to move now that we have a quorum. If we could, Representative Lanning, you want to move this?
Sure.
Representative Lanning moves House File 2255 for possible inclusion. Any other discussion on this bill? Anyone for or against that would care to testify? If not, we will lay over House File 2255 for possible inclusion into a property tax bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for starting the discussion.
You bet. Thank you. Also at this time, since we have a quorum, if we have the minutes for February 15th, if we could have a motion to Representative Dietrich moves to approve the February 15th, 2008 minutes. Any discussion on that? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion passes. Prevails. All right. And now that we have a quorum, we can do something else. We have a special birthday today. There is birthday today. We're not going to say how many. She would not disclose that for the division. But on her behalf, we also have some juice and donuts. So, Mr. Representative Earhart, I know you could pass those around if you wanted to. If you could, get them going and get things moving. That's, you bet. And
birthday girl.
And we could go to her first, and we'll pass them around from here. So.
What about the rest of
them? There will be plenty, I believe. So, happy birthday, Sarah. And if you would open those up and get them moving, please. And Representative Earhart, thank you so much, and your bill is now up.
Well, I'm sorry, but I didn't know that until I looked at the schedule outside of the door. So I don't have anything with me, and it's possible we could delay it or something.
We certainly can do that. Very good. We will lay over House File 2348. We need a specific motion to do that. So I hear a motion to lay over 2348. Thank you. Representative Lossley moves to lay over 2348. Or table. What? Yeah, we're not gonna take it up today. Do we table it, or what do we do? Okay. Well, we don't need to do a motion then. Very good. We're just gonna move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Move that. All right, Representative Heidjerkin is going to be here at 8:30, and he is going to do his bill with Representative Ward's bill. But Representative Haas is here with House File 3160. So, Representative Haas, would you care to come forward and Representative Anderson, would you care to move House File 3160?
Okay.
Representative Anderson moves House File 3160 for possible inclusion. And we do have an amendment with this.
I do.
You should have in your packet the AO8-1132, and I'll move that amendment for the author to get that into the form he wants. Is there any comments you have on the amendment 1132? And I guess everyone is getting this right now.
Mr. Chair, committee members, when I sent it up to the drafters, when it came back, I noticed that they had changed one section of the wordage, but not the other. So this just completes the task.
All right. So, any discussion from members? If not, we're going to vote on
the 1132 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the amendment is adopted. Representative Hodge, if you would explain your bill.
Thank you very much. I have to talk slow. I have a testifier that needed to leave the room. So, if the questions are complex, I'll just kind of slow my speech down. As counties have evolved in the past rulings, the wordage here pertained to municipalities, and now with the evolution of tax-forfeited lands and the work of the county, they want to make sure what they're doing is proper. They did do some checking, and they kind of were told it's at the comfortable nature of your county board or your county attorney, and I don't think that's probably the way to do it, and so that's why I'm asking for these word changes, and it takes it from municipality to government authority, appropriate government authority, and from municipal to government agency.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Any questions for the author of the bill? Did you need him to testify?
No, I do not.
All right. Hearing none, renew the motion. Or I guess we will lay over House File 3160 for possible inclusion into a property tax bill.
I would like to point out that your legislative aide and I have something in common. Her aide and my Social Security number are exactly the same. So.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. I think I see Representative Heidgerken here. I see Representative Ward here. And now we're going to combine two topics. We talked about seasonal rec earlier. Now we're going to talk about seasonal rec and education combined. So we really get complex in this committee from time to time. So...
Yes. We have to do it separately and then move them together.
Right now we have House File 2857 and House File 3037, which are identical bills. And so would someone be willing to move those bills?
I'll move.
All right, thank you. Representative Lanning moves House File 2857 and 3037. And we have Representative Ward and Representative Heidrich and Representative Ward. Since your number is the lower one, you get to go first. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members. And Representative Heidrich, thank you for being here as well. And my testifiers will introduce themselves, Representative Chair Marquardt, as they give their testimony.
This is
a bill to repeal the tax exemption for seasonal property owners on school operating levies. I represent two school districts in District 12A, Brainerd and Crosby. In November, both the school operating levy referendums failed. Whereas in Brainerd, we had to make $5.5 million of cuts for next year on top of $5 million cuts that we've already made over the last 4 years. In Crosby, they've had to make $1 million in cuts for next year over the cuts that they previously made prior to that. Part of the cuts are coming obviously from not as many resources for education funding as needed. And part of that, we believe, is because the property seasonal property owners have a tax exemption to pay for the school operating levies. As I sent out my survey and visited with my constituents in my district, I have heard over and over again two things about education funding. Please fix the broken system. And I think all you representatives have heard probably the same thing, and we are working diligently and hard to do that. But I also heard many of my constituents say, you know, we all need to pay our equal and fair share of portions up for education funding. And it's right, you know, I know it's contentious, I know that it's not agreeable for some folks, but in my opinion, and I think Representative Heidrich's opinion, it's the right thing to do for the future of our kids and their education. So this is asking to repeal the tax exemption And I would like my testifier, Chair Marquardt, to give some feedback from a personal standpoint of view on the face of education in our district prior to me giving some statistics. And Representative Heigl and myself will then stand for some questions.
Okay. Before Representative Heigl, did you want to just talk to the bill first and then we'll hear from the testifiers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we'll just go forth to the testifiers and then I can do the summation later on if we need to.
Very good. So,
I will introduce each one, but then I know that they will introduce themselves as they come to the mic. To my right, your left, next to Representative Heigerken is Superintendent Jerry Walseth from the Brainerd Schools. Amy Gitchell is a parent in the school district. Ann Hollum is a parent in the school district. And then Chelsea Hollum is a student in the school district who, by the way, didn't want to come down here today because she hates to miss school. has a number of important classes, but she knows the importance of this testimony today and the importance of what we're doing here today. So I just want you to be aware of that as well. So let's start with Superintendent
Walsh. Thank you very much. Please proceed, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Jerry Walsh, Superintendent of Brainerd School District. For those of you who aren't acquainted with the Brainerd School District, I want to just paint a very quick history before we move on. We're a 750 square mile district. We represent a great many of the lakes that you talked about earlier in the seasonal recreational issue. We have, we're approximately the sixth largest outstate school district. We have 7,200 students. And I want to share with you some of the educational recognition of the district, not to escalate it in value to other districts, but to suggest to you the changes that are going to occur in our district. We have been recognized by the federal government, national government in Blue Ribbon Schools. We have three of those in our district in the last 3 years. We have been identified our high school in the top 5% of the high schools in the United States every year that it's been recognized. And it's been recognized for advanced placement, and I'll talk about that in a moment. We have been recognized by Standards and Poor. I'm a firm that most of us are aware of their function. They moved into education a number of years ago, about five, and began to rate school districts and their performance in relationship to the efficiency and use of dollars. 4 years in a row, we have been identified as one of 10 school districts in this state as spending our dollars efficiently while getting major achievement. In the last 5 years, in that Newsweek magazine of identification of the top 5% of the high schools in America that's based upon advanced placement college courses in the high school, if you may. And each state identifies one male and one female AP scholar a year. So obviously with the 50 states, there are 100. In the last 5 years, 40% of those have come from the district of Brainerd. I want to paint another little picture for you. In 2003, we had 7,300 students. We had 508 teachers. This past school year, we had 7,200 students, and we had 466 teachers. At the end of the school year, we will have 7,200 students and 400 teachers. Most of you are aware of Friedman and the global economy and the world is flat. The very thing that we need to compete with in four and support our students of the future is the very thing that we've had to cut, because you have to also meet the graduation and state standards. So as we squeeze our education system, you're going to hear a number of those. Seasonal recreation happens to represent 20% of our market value in our district. It represents 20% of our net tax capacity. It also was one of the single most major issues about why our referendum was defeated. That tax load that should have been borne by 100% of the residential units and business community in our area was not. It shifted the tax rule to 80%, and they said, we can't handle it. So we're about to hear, therefore, what our tax dollars are going to provide us in the school district that has been a lighthouse school district in outstate Minnesota.
Superintendent Walsh, if I could have one question. Do you know what percent of your tax base is agricultural land, which is also exempt from the operating referendum? I can tell you.
Mr. Chair, I don't have that percentage in my mind, but what I can tell you is that I can give you a range if that's appropriate.
Absolutely.
My belief is that it's less than 15%. And that it's probably closer to between 8% and 12%.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Wofford has a question for the superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Superintendent Walsh, at the hearings that we had in the metropolitan area just before the start of session, we had a seasonal rec property owner testify that her child or children, I don't remember which, were denied access to summer school, that they wanted their children to participate while they were spending the summer at their lake cabin, and that she felt that it was particularly unfair since she was paying for the basic operating of the schools that her children were not being allowed access to the summer programming in that school district. And do you know if that was a district policy or if that's a state policy? Because, you know, it did seem to raise some issues about, you know, the value of the contribution as well as the benefits and the access between those property owners and the district.
Mr. Chair, Representative, let me start off by saying I'll be glad to be held accountable for the decision in our school district and will not be held accountable for those in others, but would choose to tell you that there's a state statute that talks about the right for open enrollment of a student from one district into any other system. And that if they chose to register in our district, we would have accepted it.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Earhart.
Do we have anybody that is familiar with the state statutes on this affair? Because I think that there is something in state law that does not allow seasonal and rec children to go to the district where they're... No? President,
Representative Earhart, you might be heading into the education area more than facts here. But
Mr. Chairman, I think it's very important to this point, yeah. And I think in past discussions about this, that issue has come up.
Mm-hmm.
There's been denial on the part of the school districts based on some law or some other reason, so I don't know how we find that out.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Earhart, in my, you know, almost 6 years now in education policy and finance, I don't remember that issue even being talked about. I can't believe that that wouldn't have been an issue. Personally, I would have been not in favor of excluding kids, you know, based on why they're in the area. I would agree with the superintendent. I guess my response to Mr. Representative Earhart, I don't remember having any discussion whatsoever about that, and I would question whether that is the case, to be honest about it. But we can check
it out. In my 18 years here, I have had a discussion about it, and I've not been on the education.
Okay. We'll need to look into that.
Thank you.
So, next testifier, please.
Thank you.
What?
Good morning. My name is Amy Gitro. I'm glad to catch everybody while they are still on their sugar high from their donuts. Happy birthday. My sister's birthday as well, so. I come here today from a little town up north called Nisswa on the northern edge of ISD 181, also known as Brainerd. Ours is a beautiful area full of trees, lakes, and wildlife. Most of our wildlife in our little town is the most beautiful kind, not the kind with gills or eight-point antlers, the kind that is created by love, the kind that walks around in untied tennis shoes with missing teeth, the kind that whispers secrets to one another on the bus, decorate their lockers, and publicly love recess, but privately have a passion for math or reading, the kind that giggles during lunch, the kind that sings and paints and thinks science is cool. It is a certainty that all wildlife play a role on planet Earth, but this wildlife is the future of our planet. They will be the product of their foundation, the foundation that we create. We can give them love, we can give them support, we can give them discipline, but that is not enough, for there's one thing we owe them. We have an obligation, the obligation to educate them. Just as we were educated and those before us were educated, we must teach them. We must feed this wildlife. Feed them math, feed them science, shower them with music, art, and books. Let them grow from these feedings, grow into people we are proud to know, people that can contribute locally, compete globally, and find a healthy balance between the two. And most importantly, people that can maintain a system that continues to educate generation after generation. Education is our future, and that future is in jeopardy. I'm here to tell you loud and clear, our future is in jeopardy. Not from an asteroid hurtling towards Earth or from some terrible disease. The future is in jeopardy because we as Americans, as Minnesotans, as Brainerdites, are not investing financially in our kids. The time has come to make this investment the top priority. We as a community have done everything in our power to raise money to fight budget shortfalls and increasingly difficult financial challenges. We look around and we say, where's the funding? How are we supposed to keep paying for this school stuff? And we held fundraisers, auctions, and raffles. We added up all the proceeds and said, let's keep going. We'll get there. We sold spiritware. We flipped pancakes until we could flip no more. We put away the syrup, threw our spiritware into the washing machine, added up all the proceeds and said, let's keep going. We'll get there. So we bottled and sold our own water and wrote grants and served spaghetti to anyone who would eat it. And we added up all the proceeds and said, let's keep going. We'll get there. We could probably wrap this entire building three times over with the amount of wrapping paper we have bought year after year. So we gathered in our spaghetti-stained, syrup-coated spiritware, drank warrior water, and wrapped our presents for the auction. We scratched our heads again and asked, where is the money? And then one day, the district and the school board said, we found a solution. We know where to get the money. We'll ask the community to commit to education. We'll have a referendum, and then we'll have the money we need to maintain the level of education that has made this area so desirable to so many people. Because we all know that not only does a community define a school defines a community. So we knocked on doors and said, opportunity is here. Please vote yes. Please vote yes for kids. Vote yes for education. Vote yes, vote yes, vote yes. We had a wonderful parade, dozens of informational meetings and signs in our yards. We worked very hard to explain to our neighbors why it was so very important. And they looked at us, and they said they had talked to a guy that said the school district has plenty of money, and it is just a bluff to get more out of the community. All will be fine, they told us. We'll see. And we voted in record numbers, and the referendum failed big time. And those people were right. We were fine. The next day, nothing happened. Buses ran, teachers taught, and students learned. You see, they explained that aside from the proverbial 6-mile uphill hike and the perpetual blizzard, that when they were in school, they didn't have anything fancy, and everything turned out just fine. And we listened, and we thought, well, maybe these folks know something. And slowly, those fancy things they spoke of began to be defined. Things like keeping our schools open. Things like 80-plus teaching jobs, gone. Things like an 8x10 area of carpet. Things like an 8x10 area of carpet on the floor in an elementary classroom for the children to sit on and interact. Gone, to make room for more desks. Things like a teacher's aid to help one teacher work with the 25 to 35 students in one room while another room sits totally empty. Things like 50% of our elementary students having to change schools. Oh, and things like sports and extracurriculars at the high school level. All those fancy things we can do without. No, no, you see, they said. We didn't have the astronomy club, and we played baseball in an old field and came home when our mothers yelled for us. And we smiled at them and thought, you didn't need the astronomy club. You likely had a two-parent family with a dad that took you out in a pup tent to see the moon and the stars. You could play baseball in that field because your mother was at home all day and knew where you were. And those people, they let you play baseball in their field because they never once considered that your parents would sue them When you needed stitches from falling off the fence you climbed over to get to the field in the first place. And we smiled and we said to those folks, not in support of funding education, have you volunteered in a classroom lately to help ease the burden? If you can't give financially, maybe you can give your time. Oh no, they said, our kids are grown and gone. Oh no, no, we have jobs. Oh no, we'll be in Florida this winter. But come by in the fall and we'll buy some wrapping paper from you. And we tell them, we share with them how at Little Nisswa School we had over 1,000 parent classroom volunteer hours last year alone, and it still wasn't enough. We explain that there are just some obstacles that have to be overcome through financial avenues. Sometimes sitting in reading circle or paying $12 for 16 square feet of wrapping paper just doesn't get the job done. Times have changed, but the need has not. That obligation is still there and will always be. The obligation to educate is with a heavy heart that I tell you that these communities, and there are many, cannot or will not do it on their own. You, as a legislative body, were elected to represent the best interests of the people, and your time is now. You must act. You must act for the people that cannot vote for you, but are the ones that need you the most. Educating our youth is not just one piece of the puzzle. It is the glue that will keep the entire puzzle together for generations to come.
Thank you, Ms. Getchell. Next up, choir, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Anne Hallett, and I am a Brainerd resident.
Yeah. Could you repeat your name, please, again?
It's Anne, A-N-N-E, last name is Hollub, H-O-L-U-B, as in boy. I'm a resident of Brainerd. I have two children that attend the Brainerd schools. One of them is here with me today. Many of you, I'm sure, in this room have enjoyed our beautiful lakes and trees and wildlife. That was the reason my husband and I chose to come to Brainerd approximately 14 years ago. The other compelling reason was the quality of the Brainerd schools. Mr. Walsh has spoken to that, and I have experienced it personally with my children in school. One of the statistics that he didn't mention that I love to brag about was our AP classes. Historically, Brainerd has been number one in the state in terms of the number of students taking his classes and passing them for college credit. Number one in the entire state. My daughter, as a sophomore, is taking one of those classes, and she could surely attest that these classes have pushed her far beyond what she thought in September she was ever capable of doing. We are in a crisis right now. We are facing $5.5 million in cuts. Those budget consequences have been alluded to. In the listening sessions in our community, when the reality of those cuts has hit, I've heard that two schools are closing. All middle school extracurricular activities and sports are being eliminated. High school activities and over half of the varsity sports at the high school are being eliminated. As bad as those sound, the one that hits me right to my solar plexus is the number of classroom teachers that we are cutting. We could go around this room and put a tag on each and every one of you with the name of a teacher in Brainerd that will be unemployed at the end of this school year. All of our non-tenured teachers are being laid off. Some of them are the best and the brightest, fresh out of school, eager to come to Brainerd, and eager to be part of our great school system. They are all being eliminated. We are also having to go into our non-tenured staff to reach these budget reductions. Quite possibly, one of Chelsea's favorite teachers, an eighth grade geography teacher, with not enough experience, a former policeman who followed his heart and came into the classroom and has turned out to be an outstanding teacher who cares deeply about kids. Quite possibly, he will be unemployed. We don't know the exact numbers yet. Those are being determined as we speak. The result of that is we are looking at an average class size at the secondary level, which is what I would like to speak to, of between 35 and 38 students per class. That's an average. That means some classes will have more. I would ask any of you to go into any middle school in the state and spend a day in a middle school classroom. If any of you have middle schoolers at home, and my other child is a seventh grader, you know the energy level that they have. You know how distractible they are. And even the best teachers are challenged to keep those children on task. At the high school level, imagine trying to do a chemistry lab in a classroom designed for 24 students with 40. In addition, we are having to eliminate all of our what we call B classes. When I worked in education, we called them basic classes or remedial classes. These are the classes for students that don't qualify for special ed, but are not up to grade level and need more help in the basic areas of math, science, and reading. We've had the quote-unquote luxury of having smaller classes for those students, 15 to 20 kids per class. We have to eliminate those classes now. On the other end, we are having to reduce the number of AP classes. So we are now looking at high school teachers next fall with an average of 35 to 38 students. And now we have put those students not attending at grade level in that classroom. And we also have students who are able to work and achieve at a college level in that classroom. We have some outstanding teachers, but there is no way that that teacher can adequately teach all of those students. And I especially feel for the high school teachers because of the pressures that they are feeling, and those pressures are coming from right here in St. Paul in terms of increasing standards, increasing accountability. I don't have a problem with that, and I don't think most parents do or educators, but they're being expected to do more with less. And to me, that's unconscionable. I know that you're under the doom and gloom of a serious budget shortfall, and I know that the news at the end of the month will probably not be good. Not probably, it will not be good. But this has to be solved. And whatever means you can find this year to do anything in your power, I'm asking you to do. Finally, a couple of days ago, I heard someone on the radio speaking, and this was in terms of the political debate and bringing it back to the center, and it was in regard to religion and its predominance.
We got another deal afterwards.
Okay.
And this is compelling. I mean, it's great testimony,
okay.
But there's going to be some discussion from the committee here. I know we have one more testifier.
Okay.
So if you could just summarize here,
The gist of it was, don't go to the right, don't go to the left, go deep. And I'm asking you to go deep and do whatever you can.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next testifier, please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and everyone for being here and allowing me to speak today. My name is Chelsea Hollis. I'm a sophomore at Brainerd Area High School. I am a part of the community that is the Brainerd Lakes area. And I think sometimes the obligations become blurred within these communities. And I'm here to talk about my experiences as a student and my obligations as a citizen of a global community. First, I'd like to address a common misconception that causes these obligations to come into question. Wherever I go, I always hear someone say, oh, kids these days. You know, the whole thing that she talked about back when I was your age, we always hear that. And they talk about kids drinking and partying, and then they make assumptions. I believe these assumptions come from ignorance and some sort of fascination with that which stands out to us as human beings. Let me say that most kids understand the importance of education. They want to get jobs and go to college. The only reason you don't hear about these kids is because people are seldom intrigued by the norm, and also because we're way too busy with school to be making headlines in the newspaper. Now, why are we so busy? First, because we have to be. I'm currently taking one AP course and hopefully was planning on taking more throughout the rest of my high school career. And these reduce college tuition costs because you get high school college credit in high school. This is also the pace that I work best at. My friends and I get through some non-AP courses and we're just bored out of our minds because it goes so slowly and we work at a much faster pace and higher level. We are also the type of students who learn best by asking questions and delving deeply into the material. Even with 35 to 40 kids, this is incredibly difficult to do. This many students also participate in extracurricular activities. I'm in debate and student congress, which is the only reason I own a pantsuit bracelet, but colleges don't just look for good grades and test scores anymore. Debate was my key to college. It's what stands out on a resume. So it was going to get me in and get allow me to do whatever I wanted. But now it's going to be gone. Colleges can't just individually look at each school and say, oh, well, poor Brainerd, they didn't have activities. We'll let them in anyway. It doesn't work that way. I'm sure you've all heard how many students Harvard rejects that have a 4.0 GPA. And says it's because other students have higher GPAs because of the AP classes, and they have outstanding extracurricular activities on their resumes, and we won't have that opportunity. And we all know that nationwide, even globally, there's heavy competition for jobs and college admissions. We cannot afford to have these opportunities depleted while everyone else is continuously progressing. My friends also participate in many sports. These, along with activities like debate, can provide students with scholarships and help maintain physical fitness. Obviously not debate, but everyone hears about the uprising of childhood obesity. And the most important reason that education needs to not only be preserved, but progress, is that it's what we love. I love AP courses. I love and need challenge. I love debate. Who knows where it may take me, but it certainly made me into the person that's sitting right here in front of you, willing to fight for what I love and for our world's future. I think that our community, all members of it, have an obligation to fight along with us here. Thank you.
Ms. Holub, thank you so much, and all the testifiers. I want to congratulate you on your excellence and your compassion, and there's many, many issues here, and I, Representative Ward,
Chair Mark, I have one more. I'm just going to summarize with one more comment, please. Yeah. And members, thank you. You've heard Brainerd's story, but it's just a story that we hear around the state. I know that all of you can share your stories as well. Even when the bill was introduced last Thursday on the House floor, I had a number of legislators come forth to me and say, you know, we understand why this lawyer introduced this bill. We respect it. We appreciate it. Representative Heiler came to me. Representative Hall came to me. Representative Noel came to me. There's a number of out-state legislators that came to me and said that and have co-authored did their own bill. So you've heard Brainerd's number, but it's a story that is oftentimes heard around the state. Friday morning, the cabin lobbyist, Henry was in my office to meet me, and I expected that. And, Kenny said some interesting things there. I just want to share those. And Henry, if I misquote you, please, clarify that.
Representative Ward, we may have him testify.
Yeah, I understand.
So, just rapidly, because we need some time here to debate this.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
If we could,
it's a story that's heard around the state.
Okay, very good. We've got a lot of issues here. Funding, and No Child Left Behind, hurdle. And very compelling, but members, I want you just to focus now on this part, on the seasonal rec portion of this, and exempting that off of the operating referendum, or putting it back on the operating referendum, and then also taking them off the statewide tax. Now, the statewide tax, if we do that, it's about $37 million that will be shifted onto, I presume, the commission is where that will go. And the seasonal rec just does pay some taxes, because out of that $37 million that they're paying now, you know, 40% it goes into the general fund, and 40% of that goes into K-12 education. That's close to $15 million. Now, that's not much, but there is some coming back, and then of course they are still on the operating capital. So if you do a new building or construction, they're still on that. So anyway, comments for Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you need more classrooms? Because I heard that you got 40 people in one classroom and you don't have any more room. Is that the case?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the answer is no. We have plenty of classrooms. What we don't have is teachers to fill them. And we've had to make the cut.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more. How much excess operating levy do you have now?
Mr. Chair, member, we have a $199 referendum that was passed in fall of 2001.
Well, Representative Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, we need somebody from the school formula to talk about what we should be talking about here. We don't have that. So I'll just pass. And, you know, how does that compare with the rest of the world and all those sort of things? That they really need the effort to do what they should be doing, and that's the people who are using the schools pay for the operating costs on it. Yeah. We don't know all that. We just have we have a compelling story, and maybe we should suggest a constitutional amendment that dedicates so much money to K-12 education, like the conservation and our folks have done. Then you take it out of our hands, and you get all the money that was available to your 10% or 15% or 20% or however much you want to carve out.
Representative Earhart, there's no magic to this legislation. Right. I mean, it was put in the 2001 tax reform bill, and you know there's a lot of debate then, and it's going to always be a lot of debate on the merits of it. I'm going to go to Representative Demmer real quick. You got a question to this point?
No.
Okay, Representative Heidrichen?
To that point, Representative Earhart, you're right. The answer was when the state came in, it said they were going to pay for every student in the state of Minnesota. Right after that, we're up around 92%, but the state was paying. Since then, it has gone down dramatically, down to the 70%.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the only thing the state said they were going to pay for was the general education formula. And most of that money is coming out of the metro, just like I was telling you yesterday, to pay for your school districts, which were not levying enough. Some of you were getting 70-80% out of the metro sales and income taxes. And we tried to level that by making, my district was getting nothing from the state. And now at least they get the general education formula money. That's what was the equity that went on at that time.
And Representative Heidrichen, I'm going to give you the last word on this little bit because it's a replay from yesterday, but then we're going to move on.
Representative Earhart, the agreement was we buy off all the referendums and you get into the picture, and you're into the picture now. But back in 01, when we ran out of money in 02 because you lost your Governor Ventura with his rebates and everything else, the governor plainly comes in, we're in a $4.6 billion deficit, we can't cut schools, so what he said, well, go back to referendums. But the referendums are not the same as they were in 01 when you made the reforms. We can't access those funds anymore.
We're going to move on. Representative Demmer and then Representative Lanning. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question. This would be for Superintendent Walstaff. Can you tell me what your enrollment has done, and can you tell me what your settlements have been each of the last couple of times with the contracts with your teachers?
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative, we have 7,200 students presently. Our contract, the last settlement was 1.5% and 2%, and the contract before that is going to be, I think it was 2 and 2.
Thank you.
Does that help?
Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, your enrollment is 7,200 now. What has it been doing through the last, say, 3-4 years in general?
Representative Walstaff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, when I shared the story, I went back to 2003 when we had 7,300 students. We presently have 72. That has been a consistent mark for all of this decade. We haven't grown significantly, and we're in a growing area, but we have remained stable.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that we have a serious problem with the way we handle operating levies in this state. And I hope no one thinks that it's just this one element that's an issue that we need to resolve, because there are many other aspects of that that go beyond the purview of this committee, as we clearly know. It seems to me, from what I've been hearing around, that school districts in lakes areas probably have more of a problem. And I heard one of you say that you felt maybe some of the regular residents voted against this because they didn't feel that those who were exempted from paying this were paying their fair share. I'd like to suggest another possibility and get your reaction to it from what I've heard from other areas, not your area, but closer to mine, and that is that those people who live there year-round or claim it as their home, because lake values have skyrocketed, they're paying much higher taxes as well. And they voted against their referendums, the referenda, because of the fact that the overall level of property tax on lakeshore property. Did you see any evidence of that in your experience?
Superintendent Walsh?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we did. As we began to sort through the impact of our referendum, we saw essentially three or four reasons why folks overwhelmingly, by the largest educational vote in the history of our district, chose to vote no. Number one was taxes. Number two was it's a state problem and the state needs to fix it. Number three, not everyone was paying their fair share.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think that suggests that there's not a simple answer here, that this is a more complex kind of thing. And what we need to also evaluate, it seems to me, that if we make this shift, and it's a possible solution, but if we make it, and if that results in lakeshore taxes going up even higher, wonder if we've really also then added to the potential that future referenda are going to still have trouble if you have to go back and ask for operating levies. And maybe the question I should ask you, if they have been paying operating levies, lakeshore, seasonal rec, are you saying that your problems have gone away, that it would have been resolved?
Representative Ward?
Chair Marco, members, Representative Lenny, no, it wouldn't have gone away, because as indicated, there's lots of components that need to be taken care of. This is only one step to a possible solution to help with the whole problem of education funding. So, no, it wouldn't have taken care of the whole problem.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Representative Heiker and Ward. Will the cabin owners then be allowed to vote on the referendum?
Representative.
Thank you, Member Representative Anderson. Right now, within the city of Freeport, in the last election, I was the only business person to vote within the city. And we have some issues with the city. The rest of the owners of the businesses live outside of the city to decide to live in a lake or whatever. No, they didn't get a chance to vote in that election either.
Representative Ward?
Chair Barker, thank you. Members, Representative Anderson. To that point, there are many times when people don't get to vote with the government invest in their infrastructure, whether it be the county, the township, the cities, whomever. There are many different ways that for example, a new building goes up to the county. Oftentimes, the voters don't get the vote on that. We all know that. Matter of fact, part of the whole problem here is one of the times, the only time pretty much that the unless the referendum is called for legally, the voters get an opportunity to say yes or no, is in school operating levies. So that's when I tried to get a chance to say, you know, my taxes are high enough. So but there are many times when voters don't get an opportunity to vote. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just stating a fact.
You know, one more little thing that gets into the mix, and Superintendent, you would also know this, is the equalization levels. Mm-hmm. For example, they have been frozen at, you know, $476,000, and we've worked on that, too. What we're going to do now is, I think Mr. Forster wants to come up here, but I, first of all, want to thank very much the Brainerd testifiers for your compassion and compelling testimony today. And Chelsea, I'm hoping we're getting some extra credit from your social studies teacher for this.
Mr. Chairman, may I add one more component, please? I drove 3 hours to get here.
You certainly may.
I'll change my hat, and I'll let you know that I'm a real estate broker in the state of Minnesota. I sell Lakeshore property, and I sell it very well. Lakeshore is finite. It will sell. Perhaps not to the people we want to buy it, but it will sell. We all pay to play. I can appreciate the legacy mentioned before us, but with the seasonal recreation people, but there's a more important legacy. We must prioritize fundamental to owning a property is the tax liability that comes with that. We're trying to help those that are raising their families in their first home, not the second home. It's not about subdivision. Taxes are going to continue to go up.
Ms. Can you please summarize this, please? And there's other testifiers. We have one more bill to do. So
I spoke to cabin owners myself this week, and they said they would expect nothing else except to pay their fair share.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming up this morning. Really appreciate that. So, Mr. Forster, did you, and Representative Ward and Representative Heiger, stay up here. I'll give you 15-second closing arguments. Mr. Forster.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, my name is Jeff Forster, and I'm Executive Director of MSRPO, a cabin owners group, and I was glad that we got into the history somewhat of this shift in 2001, where seasonal at one time did pay excess school operating levies, and then we were taken off of those, and we were put on a state general tax, which is a $37 million a year burden, and we were told that a portion of this tax was going to be returned back to local school districts. The next year, the money was made part of the general fund. And there's a lot of talk about people paying their fair share. We pay all capital bonding levies. We pay brick and mortar levies. We pay a portion of our property tax goes to pay for schools now. In 2001, or before in the 90s, when we were on the excess school operating levies, a lot of times these levies would come up and we would see articles in the newspaper saying, well, since, you know, seasonal, and I believe it's about 200 districts where seasonal, taxing districts where seasonal is more than 50% of the tax base. And they would say, well, we're not going to have to pay this bill, so why would we vote it down? And that's infuriating. A few years ago, my daughter was about 5. We were up in the Tower area, and I pay $135 a year for a swimming pool that was built up there. And I took my daughter there for swimming lessons in the summer and was told she couldn't use the pool, couldn't take the lessons. We were non-resident. So, you know, there was a big problem. And I think, taxation without representation, to get to your question, is part of the issue. Yes, people pay taxes on things that they can't vote up or down. But if they don't like the way things are going, they can vote the administrators, the bureaucrats out, the county boards or the city boards or the city administrators. These are things that they can vote for. Cabin owners can't vote in these areas, so there's a disconnect. And I think there's a problem whenever there's a disconnect between the people spending money and the people paying the money. no seasonal owner has ever come to me and said that they resent paying for local schools and local services. My wife is a teacher, and she has 41 students in her classroom right now. She teaches middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And, you know, we've long had the phrase cabins are where family happens. I mean, a lot of these these cabins are family places, and people don't resent that. I mean, you know, paying for it. But given the history, we're skeptical. There's a direct correlation between the number of levies and LGA payments. And as we've seen LGA payments fall since 2001, we've seen the two largest levy referendum years in the history of the state. I don't think there's any guarantee that if seasonal was back on the levies, that the local school districts would get the money that they need. There's no guarantee that if we were put back on the school operating levies, as things move through this process, that we wouldn't still be on the state general tax. So not only would we be paying our fair share, we'd be paying twice our fair share, or more. And I haven't seen the run, but I don't know that, you know, financially, the average cabin owner wouldn't end up better off if this bill became law. But I'm skeptical, and I don't know that this is going to solve the local school district's problem.
And Mr. Forster, if we're going to be laying this bill over, and we're running out of time,
okay.
If we have a property tax bill and this gets included, there'll be plenty of debate at that point. So
okay.
If you don't mind, I think we... Thank you very much. Representative Ward, Representative Heidkirchen, 10 seconds apiece.
To the consent
calendar? Representative Ward.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to start the dialogue.
And I want to thank Representative Ward and Representative Heidkirchen because you've talked to me a lot on this issue and you're very passionate about this issue. And I want to thank the Brainerd group for coming up to this morning. Thank you very much. We will now lay over House File 2857 and 3037 for possible inclusion into an omnibus bill. Very good. We now have a bill that was added just yesterday, and that is House File 2140. We have Representative Madore here, and Representative Madore, how many testifiers do you have?
Well, given the lateness of the hour, of Mr. Chair and members, given the lateness of the hour at this point, we'll be streamlining.
Very much.
We have just a few testifiers that will speak specifically to the issues of this bill and their communities, and then we have we do have somebody here in case there's any discussions from the members about specific numbers and okay. Impact on this.
Okay, we are really pressed. At 9:30, we are hitting the gas. And I want to leave 3-4 minutes for members' questions, so keep that in mind. So, Representative Madore, if you would please proceed.
Yes, hello, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I have an amendment to move with the bill as well.
Where is it?
It's Amendment A1, and it's a date change.
I thought I saw that through here somewhere.
Oh, yeah, there is the 2140A1 amendment.
That's correct.
Representative Wofford moves the A1 amendments. Any discussion on that? We'll vote on the A1 amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion amendment is adopted. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I don't want to waste time repeating, so I'm going to move right on to, I have elected officials here from Apple Valley and Burnsville to discuss this issue, and I'll first move to my city council member here, Ruth Rendall from Apple Valley, to explain the impact of this bill on our community.
Thank you very much. Can you state your name and please proceed?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ruth Rendall, and I serve on the Apple Valley City Council, and I've done so since 1997. And along with me today, I have one of my colleagues, Tom Goodwin, who is also on the city council and the chair of the AMM. Dr. Member Goodwin and I are here today representing taxpayers who have paid over $10 million into the taxing transit district over the last 12 years. And we are representing citizens who oftentimes don't have seats on the bus, nor do they have parking spots in our park and rides. And it's due largely to the growth south of us. We have a brief handout here that I'll quickly go through and you can read it. I apologize, some of the pictures are rather small. But the transit taxing district was legislatively established in 1976. with the district being tied to the MUSO lines, the Metropolitan Urban Service Area. The district has not been adjusted since 1976, despite significant growth in communities outside the district. Several years ago, we worked with legislators from our area to make a change, but it just wasn't the right time. The next phase, though, is in the MBTA area. We continue to see full park and ride facilities and ridership growth. Specifically at the Apple Valley Station, the recent license plate survey showed that nearly 52% of the cars at the site were from outside the transit taxing district, primarily Lakeville and Farmington, and only one-fourth of the riders were from the city of Apple Valley who are actually paying in the taxing transit district. The five cities served by MBTA are also growing and expected to increase in population by 20%, so we have needs of our own within our five cities. They're already experiencing constrained resources of not enough parking spaces and standing loads on buses. The next sheet is what is really pertinent to the issue here. It shows all the red dots outside of the black line. So everybody who are riding the buses outside of the taxing district. And you can read the rest and light of the time. The funding is one issue, but the other issue is we also need these cities to be at the table to help us do planning, because at this point we are doing planning for cities outside of our district, and they know best what is best in interest of their cities for their riders, and so we also need them at the table to be part of the planning. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Council Member. Next testifier.
Actually, we'll move to our next elected official here, Dan Jefferson from Burnsville City Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm also serve on the 35W Solutions Committee. We meet monthly in Richfield, and we consist of the cities of Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, Burnsville, and Savage, with Dakota and Scott County as well.
What's that?
And Hennepin County, too. I apologize. Council Member Workman is here to help me with this. On the 35W solutions on our legislative agenda, what we support, I'd like to read very quickly. I know we're short on time, but we do support extend the transit taxing district to the entire seven-county metropolitan area, using the new revenue for transit stations and other capital requirements related to those added areas. We support the planning and development of both construction and operation of BRT from Lakeville to downtown Minneapolis. And we also support, and this was added by the City of Lakeville, a transit station and park and ride lot with capacity for at least 450 vehicles at the I-35W between Highways 46 and 50 in Lakeville. The City of Burnsville has taken a resolution where we are in support of expanding the transit district. The City of Burnsville over the years has become a center of commerce for south of the river in Dakota County. We have many attractions to bring us many tourists and shoppers to use our amenities, and it also brings us a lot of our parkers that come to our park and ride. Our park and ride is full by 7:15 in the morning. Our rapid transit is full by 7:15 in the morning. We, quite frankly, need the relief in our area. A lot of those park and rides are coming from the Lakeville and south of us, and we could use some help in that area, like Apple Valley. A lot of our residents, if you're not there by 7:15, you don't get to park, and now you're driving downtown, and they don't have an opportunity to use the buses. We also support, though, if the transit district is expanded, especially to Lakeville, and we've talked with their city administrator, that they get the service that they need out there. They need 15 buses a day to make that service work and to give us relief, and we support giving them those 15 buses a day. So that is my testimony. I made it brief.
Very good. This is not a question to be answered, but if I understand this right, then you have this transit taxing district boundary, which are these dark lines, but people from outside come in on a park and ride, and then they use your system. So you're saying because they use your system and they are coming from outside the district that they should be taxed, or the district should be expanded.
It's a combination of both. They use our system, but it's growing out so rapidly, and the needs of the transit system are growing now as well for our citizens. 10, 15, 20 years ago when this was all going on, it worked very well, but as we're growing out there, it's just expanding the district, and the services are needed to be expanded.
Okay.
And if we're going to expand the services, then it's time to start helping to pay for it. Because right now, if I recall, about $4 million a year from the transit district itself goes to outside our district to help subsidize other activities for those districts.
Okay. Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering what the net amount would be to the whole pie. If, in fact, I know we subsidize outside of the district, but if we brought the rest of the metro area in,
what would be the net amount of taxation funds available to run the whole system?
Mr. Chair, and we're looking at about $3 to $4 million. We have the SPA, James Clark here from the Suburban Trainers Association, and he estimates about $3 to $4 million.
Positive.
Representative Earhart.
Yes, Chairman, would that be a positive addition to the system?
Representative Bendora?
Yes, sorry, Mr. Chair. Okay. Yes, Representative Earhart, that's correct. It's a positive as well.
Yes. Yes, vote yes. Yep.
Okay. Next testifier, please.
We also have members here.
I'm sorry, Representative Tema.
Well, I just want to be sure I understand. So are you talking about expanding the Musa line in order to capture additional revenue? No? He says no, you say yes. I don't know. Someone say.
Representative Tema, in committee, the Musa was expanded a long time ago, and one of the odd things about this is when the Musa was expanded, that the transit district line didn't automatically go with it. There's a number of us wonder why that didn't happen. I just don't know. But if it would have been expanded with the Musa line, we wouldn't be here today talking about this issue.
And just Representative Tamar.
Well, I just want to make sure that this isn't going to impact my city or the Twin Cities in any negative way.
No, Representative.
Representative Bedore.
I'm trying to go as fast as I can. No, it does not impact the Twin Cities. No, it does not do any more.
Doesn't do any more damage.
And thank you for bringing that to my attention again today.
Getting a little bit back to Representative Earhart on the amount in that. I mean, in 2001, when the state took over transit, it took over the operational. So we're just talking about what was left on the debt. And so it's not the huge cost of, so it's a much smaller portion here.
Mr. Chair, we're looking at about $20 more to anybody joining the taxing district at this point. On a $250,000 home, the impact would be $47.39. But when they're not in the taxing district in the same area, they're paying $18.58 at this point right now. So it's about $20 more per household.
Okay, that's important information. Representative Wassler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any problem with expanding the financial base. I think we all value transit. But I don't want, if we do this, that to be interpreted as an endorsement of a statement saying, given the fact largest growth will be in long commutes, we need to expand our express services faster than local service. Because I totally disagree with that, in that in my area, people ride buses with no express service, are milk runs that might have 20 to 30 stops before they get to downtown Minneapolis. I've got one bus route that was totally closed down years ago. I have two others that are such limited services, they might as well be gone. And so I really feel like I don't want this to be taken as a statement of intent about how the additional dollars are used and what the priorities in the overall system should be, because I think that's a bigger issue than whether people on the fringe should be paying for services that they're using.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative, express routes are the majority of our routes in the suburbs, so it shouldn't affect where you're at. It's express routes of people coming in and going, and we wish we had more jobs in the suburbs and people didn't have to come to Minneapolis and St. Paul, but they do.
Members, we're at 9:30. Do you mind if we go 5 more minutes? Can we go 5 more minutes? Thank you very much. So we've got 5 more minutes. So do we have another testifier?
Yeah, I'm Sandy. I'm a city council. I'm also chair of Suburban Transit Association, which represents Apple Valley, Burnsville, Egan, Rosemount, Savage, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Eden Prairie, Sanhazen, Jeff, and Shakopee. And what I can talk to is for Maple Grove. If you've seen the paper in the last month, they talked about how the Maple Grove Transit Center is already full, and they've had to park a lot further from that even, and also with Southwest. Both of them are to capacity, and both of those facilities are looking for capital funds, and this is what it would help with, is capital funds. And that's really what we're looking for. And it's a fairness and equity. So we really want to just have it fair and equity. All those people outside the transit taxing district are using the facility. It's over 43% for Maple Grove, and as someone had said earlier, you want to play, you got to pay.
Thank you very much. Do you have one more testifier?
No, Mr. Chair, due to the lateness of the hour, we'll just conclude with that. But this is a very serious impact on our community here, especially in the South Metro. I realize the outliers as well, but we are also looking at the expansion possibility with the UPA project, and that we have got to have
although there are some funds in the UPA allotment at this point to purchase new buses, they are not enough that are going to meet the demand, and our local suburban transit providers will be picking up the capital cost for that. So we have got to address this issue now before we get to September 1, 2009, when that UPA is supposed to be up and running.
Well, certainly a new issue for me. Mm-hmm. Council members, we're talking to division members. Any other further questions here? Anyone else that would care to testify that had not planned for or against this bill?
Mr. Chair, do you want me to fill up the room here?
I know you said, Representative Majora, I appreciate you streamlining this very much, and I, by the way, where else has this gone? I mean, ultimately, it's a taxing issue, certainly, but has it had any other stops along the way?
It has not. It was vetted through the Senate, but we weren't able to get it through last year here in the House. So, actually, Carolyn Teske is working with me on the next step of this as well.
Very good. Well, I appreciate the testifiers and Representative Nador. Chair will lay over House File 2140 for possible inclusion into the... Well, first of all, I think we have to move it. I don't know if we ever moved it. So I will first of all move House File 2140, then we have the amendment added, and now I'll lay over House File 2140 for possible inclusion. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for including us in, Mr. Chair.
Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you for your indulgence. We are adjourned.